Tech Chat 50 for Sarah Talk. Joining us tonight, Mike Calvo, Peter Bosley, and Bill Sparks on tonight's topic of data backup, offsite data backup. We have to plan for the unexpected. Any number of things can cause us to lose our data, things like fire, flood, theft, accidental deletion. You ever deleted something you didn't mean to? Hurricanes, viruses, or Trojans. And one I just read about today, Microsoft and their myriad of updates that they put out Tuesday, some folks are getting the what's called BSOD, or blue screen of death. And if that happened to us, we would be in trouble, because you have to go back and get your Windows Restore CD and maybe go into safe mode. So it's important that we have some mechanisms in place so that we can get our data backed up. I'm going to start with Mike Calvo, because he's the first one to put the bug in my ear, playing around with a service called EC2. So I'll talk with you, Mike, about why it's important to do the backups and kind of which technologies you're playing with, and we'll go around to Peter and Bill as well.
When I first got into this, I have a serious fixation with cloud computing. Cloud computing basically means that your computer system is nowhere. It's out on the internet somewhere. And without getting too far into it, there are things that are called virtual machine images, which are literally a real big computer that they have taken and made it into a bunch of little computers through the use of software. And that computer can be configured in just about any way that you want it to be, with how much RAM you want, what operating system, all of these different things. And there's a service that Amazon provides called EC2, or Elastic Cloud 2. At the end of the day, that's where all this is going to go. Ultimately, we envision a world where you're not going to really have a physical computer like you have right now, or like I have here at my desk. I have a big old tower sitting on the floor. Ultimately, you're going to have a device, whether it be a PDA or a smartphone like an iPhone or whatever your device of choice is, and you're going to be able to log on to the internet and access your computer image through this EC2 or another cloud type service, which Pete can mention later if the platform proves to be what we think it is, and it's looking that way. It's going to be really cool, because you'll be able to literally buy your computer online from a company that can provide you this kind of bandwidth, this kind of storage, this kind of processor, this kind of RAM, maybe even this kind of software installed for you to use. And when you want to upgrade it, instead of having to go out and buy a whole new computer, you just call the company and say, hey, why don't you give me a couple more gigs of RAM. Give me another gigahertz on my processor. The thing we love about the storage solutions, like Amazon's S3 service, which is the storage component of their cloud service, is that it is literally unlimited storage. The way it works is kind of a very simple set it and forget it. There are several clients that you can use. The S3 service by itself is not something that you would use as a consumer by yourself. You would sign up for the service. They would give you a username and a password. For lack of a better term, they actually call it a couple things. It's an ID number and a secret number or something like that. You go find yourself your favorite client. There's free ones. There's a couple of free options. I use one called WebDrive, and I like WebDrive. It not only can connect me to S3, but it can also connect me to FTPs and secure FTPs. And for those of you that are not as geeky as those of us here on the panel tonight, they're just different forms of file storage, whether they be corporate or whether they be secure or not. So basically, all you do is you assign this S3, what they call a bucket, or a drive, for lack of a better term. They call it a bucket. And the reason they call it a bucket is because you can have several buckets or several drives. You can assign this bucket a letter. So let's say your computer only goes up to letter F, because you've got a couple of CD-ROMs or DVDs. And so you assign this thing drive G. And whenever you click onto drive G, you'll see a regular Windows listing, just like you would anywhere else. And when you want to copy files there, you just copy them. You just literally copy them to your clipboard, paste them in there. You can, you know, copy files from there into your computer again. You'll never see the difference. You can also open up, if you have Word docs stored out on the cloud, you can open them up or whatever. When they save, they'll save right back there. The key here is to, of course, have a good client that works transparently with the service. If you're going to use it as a backup solution, then let's say you're using something like Windows Backup, or the solution that Peter's suggesting, which is not just access to S3, but it is actually a backup solution. WebDrive does not provide a backup solution in the version I have. I'm sure they have a backup version somewhere, but I've never needed it. I use another free client to do my backups. And by the way, when you back things up onto these cloud type situations, you don't back up your entire system. You only back up the critical stuff. I mean, if you have to reinstall your OS, guys, you're just going to have to reinstall it. What you want to make sure you get off is your data. In that data, you want to make sure you've got a file with all of your usernames and passwords and that kind of thing so that it could be stored securely up there. Nobody can get at your information on these things. They are very, very, very highly encrypted. It's a very secure way of storing your stuff. And if your computer does go tapioca, so what? You break it down, build in the new operating system, log on with SA2Go or what have you, and go connect to the cloud and just bring your stuff back in, and that's it. So it really is a very simple solution. And as Michael said at the beginning, it's a way of doing offsite backups. And it's not like it's just sitting on one box. I mean, Amazon has a huge worldwide footprint. So you're not going to be losing your data anytime soon.
Go to Peter and talk about his preferred choice, Jungle Disk. So talk about what other technologies you play with or why you've chosen Jungle Disk as your tool to do your data backup.
Jungle Disk is interesting because it's was built back when S3 first kind of came on the scene. And what they've done is basically build two components. They built a backup software, which you set it to remember the folders that you want backed up or the types of files that you want backed up, and it'll automatically kind of take care of that for you. And they also have a component that just, similar to WebDrive, creates a network drive on your machine, and they call it J, but you don't have to leave it at J. It can be any letter that's not taken up by something else. You can just copy and paste files into this virtual network drive. The software can kind of remember the folders that you use, and it's very hands-off. You set to, say, back up your My Documents folder, and you know, every time you save a document to that, the software notices and says, hey, this file hasn't been backed up. We're going to back it up. One of the very, very cool features of Jungle Disk is that if you are changing a large document, it'll only transfer the portions of the file that have changed. So that might be only a megabyte out of a, say, a 100 megabyte presentation. There are a lot of different ways to use Jungle Disk. A lot of people will point their Windows backup solutions at their virtual network drive and just kind of have it handle that way. That's certainly a valid thing to do. But I found that the Jungle Disk backup interface is very user-friendly. And once it's configured, you don't have to touch it again. And it's kind of a hands-free solution.
I want to go back to the very important issue of making sure that you're backing up all of your relevant files. As Mike said, it doesn't back up your Windows operating system per se, but you want to make sure that all your email, and like you said, your My Documents, or if you store these files somewhere else. I mean, what are the caveats that new users coming into this to ensure that they truly get everything backed up beyond the operating system? What do we need to know?
Well, the software is pretty smart, and in its default configuration, it'll try to cut a wider swath to make sure that it gets everything. I think by default it backs up anything that's an Outlook PST file. I've noticed in the last version that they released that it selects the favorites folder automatically, the desktop folder automatically. So it's, in my opinion, it's consumer ready, and it's something that I would say 90% of your typical computer users can just kind of let it go out of the box.
You're paying so little for the storage, people. What it ends up being, I think, is, what is it, Pete, like 15 cents a gig or some crazy?
15 cents a gigabyte per month, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it could quickly add up, of course, if you're saving terabytes of storage up there. You may start with maybe 3-4 gigs. Most people don't have that much information. And now if you're going to do your music collection, which I would suggest if you have a lot of music, you know, 15, 16 gigs, 20 gigs, even 20, 30 gigs, I mean, that's still not a lot of money if you multiply that times 15 cents to avoid all the garbage you got to go through for any of these online services to give you your music back if you lose it, you know, and you just upload it up there once. And whenever you buy a new track, you know, for example, I have my Serotec business folder. So whenever I get documents that I need to save, I don't even think about it. I just drop them in the folder and my backup comes along that hour and just, zoom, it just goes up to the cloud. It's gone. It's still on my machine, but I know it's stored and I can look back at my logs or whatever and see that it's there. So it really is kind of a seamless set it and forget it thing. And if your internet connection's not online for some reason, it doesn't matter. It'll wait for it to come back. The one thing I do say, though, is you do need to leave your computer on. I would suggest it just because, you know, these backups usually like the machine, at least my machine likes to back up at 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
Backup is one of those things that people tend to overlook a lot. And I'll tell you a little story. A friend of mine was doing her doctoral thesis. She was pretty computer savvy, and she also carried around a copy on a USB thumb drive. Well, it just so happened that this week her hard drive computer crashed, and before she had a chance to really print anything or work on anything, she happened to lose her keychain with her thumb drive on it. And so she asked me, what can we do about it? And I took her hard drive out of her computer. I did everything I could. But in the end, she had to retype her paper. Keep in mind, this is a 60, 70, 80 page thing from an old printed copy that she had had from about a month before.
The loss of a hard drive, the destruction of your computer is not an if, it's a when. I don't care who the hard drive manufacturer is. Don't feel secure. Oh, yeah, my computer's backed up. My computer's guaranteed for 5 years. You know, my hard drive's guaranteed. Yes, it is. Absolutely. And when your hard drive has a problem, what they'll do is they're not going to come out there and take the data off. They're just going to either send you a new one or just tell you to send that one to them, and they're going to send you a blank one. So all your data will be gone. Imagine your life right now if during this conversation your computer just lost everything. Where would you be right now? And think of that is going to happen to you someday if you don't get a backup. That's it. It's a given. It will happen to you. It's not if it may, it's not it won't, it will happen, period.
That's right. You make some good points, because I thought I was methodical about backing up things, but you always forget things, or if anything destroys your home where all of your content is, then you're back where you started from and you have nothing. Bill, I do want to turn to you and talk about links number 4 and 5 here. Number 4 is iDrive and number 5, Carbonite. So talk about those utilities and kind of what you've done with them or what you like or dislike with each of those for people trying to decide which tools to use.
The Carbonite perspective, which is a very simple interface, pretty much as Peter described, user-friendly, plug-it-in backup process. And it's very, very simple to use. You don't even have to think about it. You cannot backup, or it will not recognize your USB drives, or if you have network of storage attached drives, it will not recognize. Very easy to use, very speech friendly, no problem at all. Now, I went with another solution called iDrive, which does all of those things, and I can do multiple computers. Basically the same thing, with the exception it's a little harder to configure, and I'm still working with that process, but I should have that mastered shortly. It's just another twist. The concept is the same. It's just I have a little more flexibility with the iDrive concept. If I have more than one computer, that is a viable option.
Yeah, it looks like 5 computers and 500 gig. Some people would probably exceed that, but hopefully not. Or if you have that much data, hopefully you're also backing up to some external USB drive. So this, folks, is a work in progress. Some of us are just Bill and I are just kind of diving into it. Mike and Peter played with it a little bit longer, and we'll call on their expertise and trying to understand all the options here. The S3 is a technology that works with a variety of different applications. So some of the others that we listed here were Mozy that some folks have played with. I've heard some complaints or problems that people have had with it. Maybe one of the other issues that's come up are really large files. Because I do some audio, I have some files that are over a gig, or I make images, ISOs. And Peter, are there some size limitations on the types of files that can be transferred into the cloud?
I believe Carbonite won't let you do anything bigger than 2 gigs. Mozy's limit, I think, is 4. Jungle Disk, you can do you can do whatever you want. I've got a virtual machine image that is approaching 800 gigabytes, and it takes it, so.
Nice. That kind of sells me right there. That's pretty cool. Concern how you validate that, or you go look through a big file list, or you look through the folder structure, and like you said, because it's like a virtual drive, and make sure that everything is there that you want. Because I don't know if there are certain file extensions that are ignored.
The products behave differently. Some of them handle it by file extension. Some of them are just based on folders. Jungle Disk backup solution usually just picks a folder and it backs everything up inside that folder. And it just picks most of the user writable directories, My Documents, where Outlook stores its files, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and so does my backup solution also. And really, I mean, all you do is you can go there like any other drive and just log on to the drive, just go there with Windows and just go and look at your files. I mean, you can see the folders there and they're named. You can either preserve the Windows, the file structure that you have on your hard drive, or you can just put them in the root and then you can just arrow through them like you would any other hard drive. So if you've got your documents, you drop into your documents and then you preserve its folder structure. So you drop into your documents and then you've got your music, your videos, you look at whatever you want. If you're concerned about a document, you want to make sure it went there. 9 out of 10, it's going to go there without you even thinking about it.
Our first time backup. This is not going to happen in a few minutes, folks.
No.
It's going to take 2 or 3 days. No.
Oh, no.
It took me a week.
Yeah, it took me a week as well. I think I keep about 15 gigs of documents and stuff up there and images. And then in music, I have about another 30 gigs. So it took me a week and a half to get everything up there at 512 up. And remember, that's the restriction here is not how fast you download stuff, but how fast your internet connection is up. And even if you've got a cheesy 128 meg internet connection, it'll work. It'll go. You know, slowly but surely, and the programs will reconnect themselves.
Two important points: that A, it has an auto resume capability, because if it's going to take a couple weeks, at some point you're going to lose internet, or sometimes you're going to need the data for other things, whether sending email attachments and things of that sort. So it's smart enough to resume and make sure that the files are not corrupted. Some kind of integrity check, I would hope.
Yeah, it will resume.
The one thing about Carbonite is also, for example, it started doing a backup right before I came here on Skype. I can go in and actually pause that for a designated amount of time, that backup, and then resume it at a later point in time, or I can adjust the bandwidth that it uses so that it doesn't hog all of my internet resources.
There was one final one here mentioned called Sugar Sync. I don't know if anyone's using that. Of course, one here for the Macintosh side, MobileMe, but some of these other ones that we mentioned also have Macintosh software as well for backing up the data that you happen to have on your Mac. So I don't know if any of you are using Macs or have anything in that space, because MobileMe is, again, just documents, pictures.
No. On the Mac, the best, most seamless solution, and unfortunately it is a little expensive, is the Time Capsule. It is the coolest, most seamless situation. If you have a Time Capsule, you just plug it into your Mac and it is in the background syncing everything, saving everything. Your Mac goes to Hades in a handbasket. You bring your new Mac in after it's been restored or whatever. You plug in the Time Capsule. Time Capsule says, oh, I see you have a new Mac here. Would you like to bring it back to what your old Mac was? Yes.
Mac's a lot better in that as far as unintended installation, whereas the Mac, you can do that and you have speech in the whole process, and you could even boot off a remote image on an external drive. That's something I hope to see some evolution of Microsoft in.
Well, the one issue with Microsoft, and the reason I suspect that they haven't explored this further, is Apple has control of their entire hardware ecosystem. So they can say, we know what machines we need audio drivers on the voiceover disk for, and so we can build those into the installer. Microsoft is not in the same position, unfortunately. There's so many different PC vendors and so many different hardware platforms that I'm not saying they can't do it, but it's...
I was going to say, I would have to disagree with that a little bit there, Pete. I mean, because really, you're dealing with only a few different, while there are dozens of manufacturers of hardware, there are only a couple of different codecs or chipsets that are used in these. You've got AC97, you've got only a few, and Windows has all of them. I would say that it's other limitations. I would have to disagree with that particular statement about the drivers. I don't think that Microsoft, their head, when it comes to that, Apple has... Originally, they started as very geeky. You know, the Apple used to be able to buy way back an Apple in pieces and put it together. And then all of a sudden, now they've gone to the other extreme where it's plug and play, not plug and pray. And that's the one thing. I mean, I love my Windows machine. I use Windows 7 every day. I think Windows 7 is the best operating system Microsoft has come up with in its lifetime. But it still has a far way to go for me as far as product recognition, product installation, restoration from death. And then Apple has really, really smoothed that process out. And I think it's just that Microsoft just hasn't done it. It's not that they can't. It's just that they won't or they haven't. You know, I don't think there's any real limitation.
We found ways to, at least in XP, and I hope Windows 7 very shortly, to make an image, a bootable, unattended installation of that, including not only Service Pack 3, but also any updates that have come out since. And I stopped on the 22nd. I'm a little concerned about deploying the ones this week. Some folks, of course, having the issue with the blue screen of death. That's maybe the downside to having the latest and greatest of everything. But also, and this is the one element I haven't gotten yet, is driverpacks.net with 13 different .7 zip files with all of the drivers, or hopefully almost all the drivers, like you said, chipsets and LAN and audio, sound, video, the whole nine yards. And it totals like 717 devices, which to me still sounds maybe a little low. But the point is that then we can, blind folks, install this by ourselves. It'll skip either insert or wait until the end of the process. The entering the product key, it'll skip the out-of-box experience if you select the checkbox to do so, and a number of other things that you can do to really customize the install and do it without sighted assistance. Although, obviously, that's a last alternative because you are basically erasing everything on the C drive at that point. It's when you've exhausted your other means and realize that Windows is just corrupted in such a way that we need to build it from scratch. What I'm showing here is a review that goes back to August of last year comparing 10 different apps, and many of them have already been discussed this evening. But I want to talk about one that's very popular in the blind community, that being good old Dropbox. A lot of folks playing around with that. Of course, you get 2 gig for free, and you can get some other email addresses, be they someone else's or even other ones you may have. You can get another, I think up to 1.25, get yourself up to 3.25 gig to transfer. But it's not a backup service, it's a synchronization service. So the way I would use that is for making sure that all certain files, audio projects I'm working on, and anything that I edit, anything that is mine, synchronizes between all of my machines, so I can grab my laptop and head out somewhere and know that all files are there with me.
All of your data in your Dropbox folder, it is on S3, and if all of my machines were to now spontaneously combust, I could sign back into Dropbox on another machine and it would pull my files down.
Dropbox, to my knowledge, only shared a specific directory. You had to choose directory, so it was very limited on what you would...
That is true. You do have to put stuff in your Dropbox folder. So the stuff that's in your Dropbox folder is synchronized with Amazon S3 and the rest of your machines.
Right, but if you think about that, Michael, it's not looked at as any different. Now we're getting into the land of the geeky here, but you could actually set up a network drive or a share or whatever, where that is, theoretically, it's a folder, but it's, you just back up all your stuff to it. You know what I'm saying? So you, and then you set your software, your backup software, to just dump stuff to your Dropbox every time it's going to dump stuff instead of, you know, to S3 or whatever. And it doesn't care. It's always dumping to one place. It's once it gets into that one place, that's the structure.
The important thing that a lot of people don't seem to understand when they share these, it's designed for synchronizing your own files. So if you delete from any one of those hard drives, it removes from the others as well, though if you have the ability to go do online backup, especially if you're paying for it. But the important thing to understand there is it's not designed for the way that people have been using it for sharing music and things like that, that they may not even have the rights to. So be mindful of that. This has become very popular, and it works, and it's great for collaboration. I mean, we work on...
use it all the time, yeah.
Yeah, for all things radio podcasts, we're all the contributors. I can work with people and say, here's a file I've got. I can listen to it, edit it, save it back in the directory. It synchronizes back across the machines. So a very powerful resource and saves a lot of time as opposed to storing somewhere and then having to log in via HTTPS or what have you, or get an email and say, this has been updated, that has been updated. You hear it. Your screen reader says 2 files updated or whatever, and you can go. And so you're getting all that in real time. So it's a great, powerful collaboration tool.
Dropbox actually also has an iPhone application, which is pretty cool. You can access your documents from your iPhone and send links to files to other people.
Can't wait till they open it up to where you can download your files to your iPhone. I do hear, though, that the iPad is going to allow you to actually open documents and stuff like that right from Dropbox and open them right on the device, which will be neat.
You can open anything that's like a plain text or HTML or I think even Office 2003 documents.
If you look through the show notes here, I did this a couple years ago, so I've done it before, but the Mike Tech Show podcast, which, of course, we're part of the Tech Podcast Network, and that's another great show, and they're done by Mike Smith in Pennsylvania, and he talked about expanding this concept of building your own unattended XP installation disk, and so I've got a lot of links here for those who really want to pursue it further. You can listen to his MP3 file. If you want to save a little time, you can queue into it about 10 minutes. The gist of it is that you get this program called Nlite, N-L-I-T-E. You take your Windows XP disk, and I think eventually this will be out for 7. I got it for Vista. I had problems with that, so I didn't spend a lot of time on it. So you use Nlite. You copy your i386 folder or just the whole Windows disk to a directory, and you run this Nlite, and you go in, and you get the link here I've got that's number 15 for Windows XP SP3, and then you can use Nlite. You could slipstream that into there. You can go get all of the hot fixes, basically all the updates that have come out since SP3, and then you get this cool little app called Ryan VMware Integrator that works very well, and you can slipstream all of those. Then there's what's called Nlyte add-ons, and these are basically CAB files, the files that end in extension of .cab, so you can slipstream all the latest software on it. So you can have Internet Explorer 8, so that way it's not coming with the default of IE6, which is very unsecure and really not going to be supported. So you can have the latest Firefox, you can have Adobe Reader 9.3, Windows Media Player 11, CCleaner, FileZilla FTP, and I got about 30 different CAB files that I found, and I guess if you're really geeky enough, you can make your own CAB files and probably slipstream them in there. There's a text file here if those of you really want to be aggressive and play with that. But again, the whole purpose of this is making your own installation DVD at that point so that you can do it yourself without sighted assistance or if you're working on the computer of someone sighted. So the only snafu we're working out is how to slipstream all these drivers in there. I'm determined to do it. I've made it a goal to figure it out. One way, one day. But a good resource is this driverpacks.net. I mean, there's all the drivers there, and they're in this .7z format with a free decompression utility called 7-Zip Archiver. So without getting too geeky, going into all the specifics, Mike Smith and the podcast there goes into greater detail. If it's something people are interested in, we could do a real total geek out show, and or maybe do a segment on the podcast if people are interested. So if you are, let me know, and we could maybe do a 10-minute guide to kind of building your own disk and put that in the regular podcast or something.
And stay tuned, folks. I'll get with Michael and show him the Windows 7 side. There's a new tool from Microsoft called Windows Automated Installation Kit, and that's what you do for the new versions.
So stay tuned, folks. This is only the beginning. Portable USB. So I want to ask you this, Peter. You're going to go up and work on a machine, but you don't know that machine might be infected. You don't know it might have some problems with it. So how do you approach that? Do you have some USB stick or an external drive that cannot be rewritten back to, or use a DVD so that obviously the machine can't write anything back to your software so that you know it's safe? But this was talking about a super anti-spyware portable scanner so that you can put it on a U3 stick and come up and diagnose. And it also has some Trend Micro antivirus so that you can scan for viruses and get the updated definitions. Although it looks like you have to go into a safe mode to do that. Those of us who are geeky enough and want to help somebody, a family member, a friend, want to work on their machine, but make sure that we don't turn around and infect ourselves. Well,
Sunbelt Software makes a very, very good command line scanner, and it's at http://live.sunbeltsoftware.com. That's a tool that I generally use. I'll download a copy of that onto my U3 drive that has system access on it, walk up to a machine, plug it in, and I will run the virus scan from the removable USB drive. If I'm really very concerned that the machine is infected, and folks, this is my advice to most people that get their machines pretty infected, is if it's bad enough, we just blow it away, start over from scratch. If I'm that worried about it, what I'll do is I'll just format my U3 drive when I'm done with the machine.
In 2 weeks, we're going to do a show on advocacy, and we're very excited about that. We're going to have Kelly Pierce from Chicago and hopefully a gentleman from Toronto. That covers so many facets, so many areas, whether it's access to buildings or websites, crime victims advocacy. It takes on whether it's using your bank. You know, there's so many forms of advocacy.
There is a tool from Microsoft now. It's Microsoft's kind of own antivirus, and it's called Microsoft Security Essentials. So for those of you who hesitate to pay for virus protection, Microsoft Security Essentials is a fairly accessible free option for you as long as you are running a genuine version of Windows XP or later.
Go right to Microsoft.com and type in, I think it's just MSE or Microsoft Security Essentials, and the link to the executable comes right up.
I've installed it on a few customers' computers, and they seem to like it.
Hank and all.
Okay, Hank, go ahead with your question, sir.
What do you guys think of Viper? I have it. It seems to work fairly well, and it does things it says it will. So what do you think?
We love Viper. Viper works very well. It seems to catch a lot of things that other software does not. So, and Sunbelt Software has been really good about working with Serotech, and of course they're coming out with their new 4.0, which will have firewall built in if folks want or feel that they need the addition of a firewall. So Viper's been very good. Sunbeltsoftware.com.
I work in the university environment, and we get a lot of machines that are very, very badly infected, and I have yet to see one that Viper has not been able to clean up for me.
So it's worth the money, and you can get a home site license, so you can put on as many machines as you need at home, and it's $49 a year or so, but you know, you think about it, $1 a week, it's great protection. It's going to save you, and it's very speech-friendly. It doesn't use up a lot of resources, as many of these other ones do.
Right around Thanksgiving, Black Friday time, they usually offer it for $39 a year, too.
I got mine for $19.
Question from Kim. Maybe I missed this, but Mike, which backup solution do you use? I don't know if she meant Mike Loff or Mike Calvo, but I have not used any of the online ones yet. I'm trying to decide which one. That's part of why I did this. I use a program called Acronis True Image, so I make an actual image of my hard drives, and then with this unattended Windows install disk, I can do that, and then use this image, this .tib file, and restore it back to when it was. I also back up all my important files on USB and so forth.
I use WebDrive to access my S3 in real time. For backups, I use something called S3 Backup. It's an open source. It's a free thing. Kind of geeky, but it works. It's free. If you're not real geeky, if you're not into configuring stuff, I would go for either Jungle Disk or for the Carbonite solution, you know, one of the more consumer solutions. And I don't use them, so I don't know what we work with. But I would assume that both of these guys use System Access, and they're using these tools.
If you have a Mac, it is worth every penny to buy that Time Capsule, because Time Machine is such an awesome implementation. Apple just blew that one out of the water.
I use an app called Super Duper. There's one free one called Carbon Copy Cloner. I like Super Duper. Like I said, I boot off an external drive. You can boot off a USB drive or a FireWire. Of course, with the VMware, you can literally just copy and paste an image, and that's like you have a backup of your system. A question here from JJ at Blind Bargains asking, I noticed Google wasn't mentioned. They have a cloud service as well. Has anyone tried it?
Google storage is really for documents. Their storage is for your email, for your pictures on Picasa, and your Google Docs. I haven't seen anything from them on the just straight storage front. The point that we're making to you folks tonight is that backup is really important. At my workplace, we spend close to $100,000 a year just on our backup infrastructure. It's because Murphy's Law. If something can go wrong, it probably will at some point.
Even these updates. Have you had any problems with any Windows boxes with these updates that came out in the last 2 days?
I pushed the update to a small test group of our end users to verify that they were working properly, and I haven't seen any issues. But we are on one hardware platform. We've got one basic type of machine. So.
And how many machines would you oversee so people get an idea when you talk about spending $100,000 a year?
We're at about 450 workstations and maybe 60 servers.
Okay, one question here says, is it possible to install JAWS or other screen reader on an unattended install?
Could probably do NVDA.
Something that's not going to grab your video drivers, because JAWS, it's kind of, you get to a chicken and an egg scenario where, you know, is your video driver in first or not? And that's with anything that's using a mirror driver. It's not just JAWS. That would be, you know, any AT that uses a mirror driver. You're going to have a problem there. And I don't think you can, unless you can really hack the, I mean, Pete, you're the network guy, I guess. Can you hack one of those things and add the installation file to the end of the string?
Yeah, you could script it. It's possible. It wouldn't be very easy, especially with the video driver ones, like Mike was saying. I think probably WindowEyes could be done maybe too, but I really doubt that JAWS would work, just because during the unattended install, Microsoft doesn't generally allow you to install unsigned drivers, and Freedom Scientific's video driver is not cryptographically signed.
Question from Philip. He asks, can we all put links to the things we talk about? Certainly we will add links to this when I complete and go through anything that's not currently in the 26 links that we started with. Come back to the accessible event or go to the socializer. We put a link there. I keep them in a place called serotalk.com/shownotes/backitup.htm. But you can go to the information center or the socializer, and then the links are updated there. That's part of the power of accessible event.
I'm just wondering what others think about the accessibility of Nero Backitup, because I got a copy on an external hard drive recently, and I tried playing around with it a little bit, and I found it very difficult, and I don't know if it was just me or if others are able to use Nero Backitup.
Nero Backitup is not something that I've found works too well with System Access, but it is certainly an option. What Nero Backitup does is it'll back your files up to either removable media like a DVD or a CD. I believe it's also possible to point it at a folder, so you could certainly point that tool to a network folder that you made using WebDrive or even your Dropbox folder or anything like that. Folks, I strongly recommend that you kind of stick with the same solution. So if you can go with Jungle Disk for your backup and your storage, do that just for ease of use and ease of troubleshooting.
I mean, Acronis is all fine and good. It's nice, and you can save all your settings and stuff, but it should never replace doing a full backup. We can look at some of the other ones. Some people have done things with Ghost, Paragon, drive image. Again, we don't want to replace the off-site backup because anything can happen in your premises. It is nice to have that image so that you can restore all of your settings so that you're not going back and configuring all your programs.
So here's what I generally do with an image, and this is what I do for people when I build their machines for them. I will install their operating system, install their drivers, install the updates, but I won't load any of their personal data, and then I'll make a full system image of that, and then if anything were to happen with that, just walk them through restoring their image. They've got their machine back, they've got their drivers installed, and then they go to their offsite backup and restore their data.
And so what software are you using to make that kind of pristine image, if you will?
I actually use Acronis as well.
Yeah, I'm using an older version because the newest one seemed to go backwards in terms of accessibility.
I actually use the command line tools, so I don't know about
that. There you go. He's a man. He got the command line stuff. He's got it all worked out. Well, I think we're going to put the wraps on it there, folks. But I thank you, all of you. Great questions. And thank Peter, Bill, and Mike Cavill for taking time out. Can't stress it enough. Back it up. It's not a question of if, but when. So you need to be prepared because there's nothing more heart-wrenching than to lose valuable work. Imagine losing a thesis or just documents, music, your favorite audio. Our computers are life, and so we need to take time and back it up. So join us for our podcast coming up this Monday. We're going to talk about some new cool iPhone stuff. We're going to review some radios for folks who love radios and a few other surprises. I'm also sometime very soon going to speak with a gentleman who's written a book about how to build your own computer. So we'll expand on that hardware for those who are geeky enough to want to go down that route. So stay tuned. A lot of good stuff coming up in 2010. So until we meet again next week, let's stay connected and stay directed.